Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist, and it's fantastic to be here with you tonight. Tonight, we're going to do something very special. We're going to go very deep into the deep events of the UFO file and how that has influenced the entire geopolitical structure that we're living under currently. How did we get here, and how much does the exotic technology play a part in all of it? This is all going to come out in major force tonight as we reveal now the arc of time and the actual arc of the period in history where all this has come through. In this very special episode, we're going to be dealing with some of the rollouts that they're doing now with this Trump version of disclosure, this kind of minor league disclosure that they're doing. And yet it is something extraordinary behind it when you think about the force of the president and his own personal history through his uncle. Now, as you know, I reported that there was something very strange going on in relation to the Golden Dome when they were erecting these Golden Defenders, which is going to be the actual headquarters for the Golden Dome. And what's interesting to me about all that is that it's taking place in the headquarters for this Golden Dome is going to be right in the same Philadelphia shipyard where the Philadelphia experiment took place. Now, we did an entire episode on that last week, which I highly recommend that you take a look at to kind of keep you on board with the developments of what's happening there. I can't emphasize enough the kind of complete over-the-top meaning of the Golden Dome as UFO defense grid, as an entire changing of the shape of daily life in America and really around the world as they go to imitate these things, of course. Originally, it's something that's supposed to be over America, and then maybe Canada will be lucky enough if their relations improve with the current administration. There was all this talk, as you know, at the beginning of the year about Greenland and some of the aggressive moves. We're going to take over Greenland, you know, just like we're going to take over Cuba, and it's take over this and take over that. The reason around Greenland definitely pertains to the arc of that Golden Dome and what they want to set up there. And there may be legitimate foreign policy logistics around having Greenland be under the kind of tighter purview of the United States. However, the idea that you can go in and invade a NATO country is just absurd under the control of Denmark currently. So some of that really kind of boisterous diplomacy, cowboy diplomacy by the Trump administration does not appear to be paying off in any way, shape, or form. We get around these topics. And I think that's important for us to realize as well, that you're in an era where you can't really see what's going on beneath the surface because the rhetoric on top is trying to brainwash you over and over again that, you know, oh, we've got this under control. You know, Iran is begging us for a deal and all this kind of stuff. The foreign policy mistakes that are going on are overshadowing the domestic victories in the current administration. And that's a real shame because certainly things like the new vaccine schedule and things relating to a potential prosecution of Fauci and things of this nature are very valuable accomplishments. And I think a lot of that social policy certainly pushing forward. But the foreign policy is borderline disaster. And if it's not turned around, it may set the whole world on fire. That's what's in the heart of all this when we get into it, looking at it from the point of view of the continuity of government program being set off because of those emergency powers in the heart of it. And when you get really right down to it, what you're looking at is any good excuse to set off those emergency powers if you're this group in the background kind of biding their time. Continuity of government program, we've highlighted it on this show and the UFO file in relation to it and the advent of emergency powers as a result of a UFO threat conjured up by the Central Intelligence Agency through various bad actors in that environment. And we've pointed out a number of the bad actors on stage right now, like Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, and others, the DOD billionaire and the CIA agent Elizondo. And they've been building a narrative now since originally in 2016, Mellon had come out and said, oh no, the government's told you everything. There is no there in relation to UFOs. A year later, he changed his tune. The New York Times came out with the article. Elizondo was rolled out. These things are important in this sense, and they form part of the timeline of the deep events in the UFO file. I can also say this in relation to the moves that they're trying to do. They're trying to take government power in relation to this UFO threat now. That's why it's more perilous than it was, say, in 2017 when they were trying to manage this narrative and keep the public out of anything close to the truth. That's what the CIA is good at. That's why they can roll out counterintelligence agents and worse, you know, caught in the background like a deer in the headlights. That's never a good position to be in. And what I hope to do and really bring across, and some of the things that we've brought across here in the Dark Journalist X series, is something that is just in time to pull us out of it. And, you know, we talk about this a lot because we've revealed a number of things on this program far, far in advance. And when it comes to especially the UFO threat program, now everyone's starting to catch on and get it when we were introducing the topics, you know, in 2018 or something. And it takes a long time. It's like a 5 to 7 year curve there of the general media catching on. And you see a lot of that in relation to the COVID op too. You know, you have the mainstream people going, oh, wow, you know, look at this Pfizer document. They're talking about how the various mRNA causes pregnancy irregularities and things like that. And you have all these people who were studying the COVID op earlier being like, we brought that out in 2020, 2021. Hello, where are you? You know, so the Johnny Come Lately thing is very interesting. In this field, it's dangerous around the UFO file because you're looking at emergency powers and how that can be mismanaged and put in the wrong hands. And by the time you're in emergency powers, it's too late. As you might very well remember, the COVID op was no walk in the park. However, that'll look like a walk in the park compared to what they'll do with the UFO file. We're going to get into it all tonight through the lens of the timeline of deep events in the UFO file, continuity of government, and emergency powers, UFO threat. It's all in this very special episode tonight with some real blockbuster figures through history, including Lloyd Berkner, who was the physicist that was working very closely with the Kennedy administration on its space program. How does that line figure into all this that we're facing here in 2026? We're going to get into all of it. Before we go any further, I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That is a free newsletter, but it keeps us on track through the immense, and I mean heavy-duty censorship that we've been seeing, which really, you know, tries to wall off the content and keep it on the back burner while it's constantly plagiarized by the pop-click podcasts of the world. That's been very, very well proven, and there are many cases of it even this week, you know. So, and it's very unfortunate, I think, in general. And there needs to be kind of a new approach in the independent media for these people, not just making off with ideas with no attribution. You know, giving people the right credit and especially attribution and citation for work, that's general journalistic, you know, rules that we live by in general journalism. But they don't seem to apply in the weird pop click world, you know. And they also are trying to sort of drive people over the rails by just shoving these different topics at them with no real lineage to where the ideas are from, the context of the ideas, and the real wisdom and knowledge and research that goes into them. They just like the, you know, lot of sizzle and no steak approach, throwing the headline out there and the thumbnail with the big mouth open, like, oh, you know, some UFO thing. UAP. And it's unfortunate. This can be a very thriving environment in terms of general information. It can be a very thriving environment in terms of, you know, independent sharing of ideas. And that kind of Wild West thing, one of the advantages of that in the original idea of the independent media was that you can get real truth coming to the surface without those corporate blockers or those government blockers. And this is crucial because what I see in general, especially right now, is this incredible push towards junk conspiracy. And you're getting people kind of getting wound up and being pushed over a cliff on the really the wrong topics. And, you know, trying to get people wrapped up in little dramas that don't have anything to do with their real lives. And that includes in relation to foreign policy and some of the, you know, ideas that like, oh, Iran is trying to assassinate Trump or, you know, as if it was important, the gender of Macron's wife. It's not, you know, and the things that you're going to need in relation to what you have to have a good understanding of what's going on in the world, what these forces are doing. There's a lot of different economic, geopolitical, and also even mystical and foreign policy aspects. There's a lot of aspects in the background that form the philosophical doctrines for how people in power operate. These are the things that we need to learn and that we can apply. The other stuff falls under either entertainment, distraction, or confusion, you know? And whenever you get something where they're just trying to pin, you know, every problem in the world on one thing and not getting that whole global structure of all these different forces that form the deep state, then you're in a totally different world. Now, I learned so much about the deep state many, many years ago from Professor Peter Dale Scott. I was the Berkeley professor who'd been really studying the drug wars, the JFK assassination, and the political manipulation. And the professor's now in his 90s. He's still writing, and I'm actually tonight going to read something I didn't get a chance to last time, which is the latest activation of that continuity of government program, which took place in 2021 around the J6 event. Not many people know that COG was in fact activated. I've pointed out before, as we're coming up to this anniversary now, some 25 years of the 9/11 mystery, which really largely unsolved to a tremendous degree. And there's very important things there because that forms an arc of history. It's kind of like JFK to 9/11 and then 9/11 directly to the current era and the UFO threat being shaped up as the ultimate deep event of all of them. Now, a lot of the deep state researchers, as I've mentioned before, don't touch the subject matter of the UFO file. And it's too bad because the UFO world could really use that because it's terribly lacking in deep scholarship, deep research, and you know, this kind of real consideration, real journalism. This is part of the problem that we see with the field. But one of the things that Professor Scott has given us is a foundation in deep state understanding. He actually coined the term. And of course, he's appeared on the show many times. We've had many deep conversations. And I've been following Professor's work since I was about 16. So, you know, this is a very, very deep arc of history that he goes into, and the minutiae and that kind of nesting of details is really like no other. But his kind of his most famous book is The American Deep State. And I think it's a crucial book for understanding continuity of government program. He's had a number of books on 9/11. And of course, 9/11 is mentioned in that book as well. And there's a big picture of that doomsday plane there right on the cover of the book. Why I think it's so important and why we can come into the deep events of the UFO file through this lens of the original deep state originator, Professor Scott, is that what he was telling us about there is a completely unchecked system of government with no oversight that is sprawling and becoming larger and larger. And most of this pertains to underground bases and the power of this underground government, which has been in development now since the Eisenhower administration and even before. And it had a great ostensible purpose, and even that purpose worked for a long, long time, which was, well, in the event of a nuclear emergency, you're going to need this entire underground government. There's a decapitation event on the top, and you need this whole other thing to run. And, you know, there are various versions of this in other countries, of course. Russia has their own version, and France and others. However, the continuity of government in America actually relates to an entirely different system of governing. And was a deep fear around the Kennedy administration, 1961, about this idea of rogue generals just taking over through the continuity of government program. Now, what's not known about that is there was a fear that they would use the UFO issue to do that. What can be put on the record now, and we've done a number of things through this program, we've put Lloyd Berkner on the record giving the information to Kennedy, and he was somebody who worked on the Robertson UFO file. Many people say he ran it, and I think that's a good way to look at him. We've done a number of documentaries on Dr. Berkner, who was a physicist, and he comes in, I think, very important tonight, as does physicist Luis Alvarez. So all of these characters are going to show up in very important ways, and we're going to dovetail it with this idea of kind of tracking the deep events. Now, again, deep events is a term that was coined originally by Professor Peter Dale Scott. And the idea is that there's a series of events in American history where a group, some kind of covert group, has leaned into the public. Now, this is the deep state leaning into the public, this kind of parallel system. And it does some kind of major deep event, and then a number of policy changes arise as a result of that deep event. And then those forces retreat into the background. We're left looking around at all the ruins saying, oh, where did this come from? What, 9/11? You know, the death of a president, the Watergate hearings, the ousting and impeachment of a president, Iran-Contra, you know, diverting funds to Central America through Iran and missile sales. There's been a lot of extraordinary things. The financial coup d'etat of 2008, the COVID op. I mean, there's a number of heavy, heavy duty deep events in relation to this. The UFO file emergency, UFO threat that's been proffered by the Central Intelligence Agency, the NGA, the NRO, and these other groups is something that will be a deep event off the charts, and talk about policy changes. But we're already seeing that ramp up in the background. So make sure that you're tracking very closely that the program that is now in charge of the United States, the actual body that's in charge, is technically NORTHCOM, which it can be argued is an illegal organization, because as a military command, it's not supposed to be running the United States for a number of different reasons. You know, we have police run the United States, and we settled a lot of this a long time ago in the 19th century. So unconstitutionally, a number of things were introduced after the terror attacks of 9/11. And of course, there's so many mysteries behind what was behind that, and you know, that they made it happen on purpose, or they let it happen on purpose. And the amount of deep state chicanery that was involved, the false explanations, the, you know, passports from the terrorists flying out the window and onto piles of rubble where it just made its way to the FBI so they could identify the people who were doing the hijacking. There's a lot in that history of 25 years that this anniversary will bring forward, where people are going to look back and say, as they did with the JFK assassination, this does not add up. And there's been, you know, a lot of disinformation placed in the research fields as well. They've had a lot of limited hangouts. That's why a lot of that research hasn't been able to gain traction. Right in the heart of it, though, is Professor Scott's work on continuity of government. And my own study of continuity of government in relation to the exotic technology, in relation to the UFO file, that's going to be the guidelight here for us tonight. And I've been bringing this to the surface. You know, I'm happy to be that lone outpost bringing this forward and really putting the spotlight on it as people very blindly walk into this, you know, Dr. Phil disclosure and, you know, the kind of inane disclosures that we've had through this Pursue, which is officially the White House program for putting all these documents and films out, which you would say ordinarily would be a step towards massive transparency. And I do think that there's a piece in the Trump administration that wants to do it. And I think that things like the Space Force have really demonstrated that. One of the problems that I have with the current version, however, is that I think it's been stopped cold. And what we're seeing is that the president in this case can't get access to the UFO file and is not in that position where they can order the release and the disclosure of the UFO file, because the intelligence agencies and the X-Protect group in particular that we've identified on this program, and I'm going to bring up some comments that were brought up on the Dr. Phil show from Major David Grush, who, you know, we've had our own communications, and I'm going to explain some of that here tonight. Some of you may be familiar with that story, but it's important as they're pushing Lou forward and they're pushing Grush forward, and there's this kind of facing off who's going to be the UAP czar and, you know, who's going to be the official person in charge of this for the government through the Trump administration. You know, we're already seeing that the entire process is being commercialized, so they better get very serious about it, or else we're really dealing with the fact that we have a rogue intelligence agency network in charge of all that, which means their buildup to the UFO threat and the emergency powers that can come as a result. I'm going to demonstrate to you how exactly that will work. And we'll get into all of it tonight in this very special X-Series episode 233. And this is the deep events of the UFO file, continuity of government and emergency powers. Okay, so we'll start with this from last week. Philly Shipyard to build Golden Defender ship as part of new missile defense program. Hanwha Philly Shipyard will build a new missile range instrumentation vessel for the U.S. Navy that will support the Trump administration Golden Dome effort. White House Office of Budget Management and Budget Director Russ Vought announced Friday. Dubbed the Golden Defender, the ship is based on the National Security Multi-Mission Vessel design that Hanwha, finishing to the U.S. Maritime Administration's training ships. Hanwha will build the ships with tote services functioning as the vessel construction. Vought said that a ceremony at the Philly Yard will take place. Quote, the new ship will not only support the president's policies of restoring America's maritime dominance, but also support the president's Golden Dome missile defense system over the entirety of our nation. Golden Defender will serve the Missile Defense Agency and its mission. Additionally, this project fulfills the president's policy of encouraging direct foreign investment in U.S. shipyards, as is being done by Hanwha, as this shipyard is part of the broader vision to make shipbuilding great again. Well, that's all very well and good. The only problem is, let's start with Hanwha, which is an aerospace company from South Korea. And they're right in the heart of this, building this now directly where the Philadelphia experiment took place. Now, I announced this originally on the Alex Jones Show a few weeks ago, and I don't think the full implication has caught on yet. So I'm emphasizing it here, and I will emphasize it until, you know, this kind of in the dark independent media gets a handle on it and really understands what's going on here. The Philadelphia experiment is completely unexplained, relates to exotic technology, relates to a number of different things, including the UFO file, and came out through Morris Jessup and all the different things before his untimely death in the late 50s. We went into all that in the previous show. So what I want to do here is take the next level up. What was it that was going on there that they're following up on and giving, you know, this kind of homage to there in the Philly shipyard building Golden Defender, which is going to be the headquarters for the Golden Dome. So when you look at President Trump's background, as we've gone into Uncle John Trump and Vannevar Bush and all the rest of it, what was it going on back there with the UFO file that the Trump family was privy to and that really made him an antagonist to the deep state? And why perhaps those neocon elements have really hijacked so many of the things going on in the current administration. Unfortunately, you know, we started off with Tulsi and we started off with a different Navy leader and different policies that were really happening. And now you see the administration losing people and a lot of the neocon ideas coming forward. A lot of them coming forward through the presence of Marco Rubio as well, who's always had a hawkish tendency and a Secretary of State. We're really seeing that hardcore. This is somebody who also has gone on the record about the UFO file before in that kind of like, we don't know what it is, but it's a threat way, building up on that CIA theme that you've got a UFO threat you're going to have to defend against. We have to suspend the Constitution in order to do it. I kid you not that the UFO file situation and the threat aspect that they've laid out so much money and time on, they plan to cash in at a certain point. We need to be aware of that. That's why understanding the history of where it comes from is going to be so crucial. And so when we look at that timeline, let's take a look now at how these deep events work. Remember, the deep event is caused by a group there underneath the current operating system, governing system, and that is the covert system versus the public system. And that is the deep state. And it's operational on a number of different levels. We see a number of kind of smaller deep events that take place to change policy and cause tension between groups and things of this nature. However, when you're looking at the deep state and what they need to accomplish to activate the continuity of government program, there have been a number of dry runs. One of the things I'm going to read tonight are Professor Scott's comments in relation to the latest iteration. And I'm going to go through that right now, and we're going to learn a little bit about how J6 was actually related to this. And J6 may be the setup op that will lead us into the final COG op, which is the UFO threat opportunity. So this now just came out, and it's a, you know, this is Professor Scott really writing the 25th anniversary overview of his continuity of government. And one of the things I think is fascinating in this is that he points out, you know, look, President Trump actually knows that they try to launch the continuity of government program during his first term while he was in office. He's not sure why President Trump would continue to sign on to that emergency COG legislation that is prepared every year for the NDAA. So let's go through this briefly. 9/11 as a structural deep event by Peter Dale Scott. In the 25 years since the extraordinary event of 9/11, both the nation and the 9/11 truth movement have changed. My analysis of that day as a structural deep event has also changed, but to a much lesser degree. Above all, I consider that my analysis of 9/11 as a structural deep event, defined as an event large enough to affect the whole fabric of society with consequences that enlarge covert government and subsequently covered up by systematic falsification in media and in internal government records, is more securely corroborated than before. All great social changes like those on 9/11 have both good and bad consequences. And I'm going to be skipping down through some of this because it's rather long and lengthy, but I think it's important. And it's going to give us that context for understanding the UFO file. So bear with me. Early on the day of 9/11, Vice President Cheney and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, while George W. Bush was absent in Florida, implemented the elaborate rules of continuity of government, COG, as once described in Congress without rebuttal as a plan to suspend the American Constitution. It was also a plan on which the same pair, Cheney and Rumsfeld, had been working on in secret for 2 decades, even though both men were outside government and heading up important private corporations. I wrote in 2014 that, with a few notable exceptions, there has thus far been scant interest in the media and the public in the extraordinary facts that Cheney and Rumsfeld were able to, one, help plan successfully for constitutional modifications when they were not in government, and two, implement these same changes themselves when back in power. The first of these facts gives us a glimpse of an ongoing Rumsfeld that are, in a sense, a part of the permanent, though hidden, national security apparatus of the United States. Now, I'm going to continue on with more of that as we go along here. And we know that, you know, Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney are both dead, but it's very interesting to note their history early on in the Nixon administration, working for USAID and other groups that were going to foreign countries and were CIA fronts. Eventually, they would get into the Ford administration, Ford, the only unelected president in our history, as he was Nixon's vice president, and he was appointed after the resignation of Spiro Agnew, who was pressured out of office from supposedly a bribe that had taken place a decade earlier when he was a judge in Maryland. that's pretty thin action. They didn't want Agnew in when they ousted Nixon. That's definitely to be believed there. But what else do we know about Ford when we look at him? We can see that Ford, it's very unusual, actually. His real name is Leslie King. And he grew up in the system in a very compromised way and became kind of an inside source for J. Edgar Hoover on a number of different things. He became the congressman from Michigan who they placed on the Warren Commission. And he's also the one who changed the position of the wounds on President Kennedy so they could get away with the single bullet theory, which of course was absolutely absurd, but was taken as rote gospel at the time by the media anyway. Of course, people on the ground understood, and there were small researchers, you know, who write books and do radio shows and things of that nature. And I think maybe you had less than a dozen, honestly, it's just a small basket of people who are even looking at this. When you think about the kind of alternative media possibilities we have now, you know, I guess part of the problem is that it's more of like a full-fledged career for some of them, which is why you get so much junk conspiracy that we've seen, you know, and a lot of intra-group jealousies and things of that nature, you know, with the Kirk thing, instead of the deep analysis that's necessary to understand the deep state footprints. And we've done several episodes on that. Instead, you have these, you know, personal fights and, you know, going after the widow and this nonsense, which gets you further and further off the track of what really happened and why you would remove someone. And that also goes when we look at the Butler PA incident as well, and the person who was involved there, Thomas Crooks, and his kind of vapid disappearance in history and social media before the incident itself. All of these things are very apparent when we look through the lens of deep events in history. And you can see, in the words of Professor Scott, the designated culprit being crafted into position. You know, the Muhammad Atta or the Lee Harvey Oswald. These are the people who, it's very interesting with the designated culprit, they need to be off the radar enough so that just before the incident, you can see this clearing away. You know, in the case of Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, you're going back 60 some odd years to the assassination of President Kennedy. In that case, though, very interesting to note that the Secret Service and the FBI had taken him off the high risk list just a month previously. So they knew, they're positioning their man, their patsy, for all this. And, you know, when you get into a lot of the 9/11 hijackers, some of them, you know, literally weren't even the same people that their passport listed them as. So there's a lot of confusion about that in addition. I think one of the most classic things I remember about the Atta case, and there's a lot there with Atta, I think, if we go deep on that. But, you know, his girlfriend there in Florida talking about the various things that were going on. And the person that she was with sounds like a totally different individual. And then when they asked her, you know, about her previous boyfriend, he had the same exact name. So, you know, there's a lot of chicanery going on in that case. And a lot of that stretched right up here to Boston as well, where they spent a great deal of time in Boston and Maine. And I think that corridor between Boston and Maine, there are a number of these types of drop spots or drop houses, you might say. One of the things I want to point out is that when we're looking at the designated culprit, it's very important because it means that the setup requires you have to do the plan, then you need the patsy, and then you need the cover story, and you're out. So when we look at something like the Thomas Crooks situation where he was set up to really take Trump out, and Butler PA, and that was going to be a totally different spin. It was the old version of how the deep state would take out a presidential candidate. It didn't happen in that case, and yet all the handwriting was on the wall. The mysterious thing even about the house where the family supposedly resided, quite unusual, because when they actually got to it, you know, a lot of the neighbors said, well, we actually don't even recall anyone spending any time in there. And when they were inside looking around, it just looked, you know, it was very Spartan and, you know, just didn't look very lived in. So, you know, how much of that case and how much of Crooks himself was set up as the person who was going to be the fall guy for this. And we've seen other versions of this, particularly around the Trump administration. I also think that there are elements inside the Trump administration who have now been co-opted by the deep state. So we have to look for that. And we get, especially when we get around to the UFO affair. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Whew, this is episode X233. We're going deep into the deep events of the UFO file, the continuity of government program, COG, and emergency powers. And I want to remind you, of course, if you're new here, go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's free, but it keeps us in touch around the massive censorship that we've been looking at and the wall of censorship where they've really kept the information marginalized. What you'll get in there is the incredible weekly X-Series programs, mind-blowing interviews coming up, remarkable for the end of the summer, off the charts, and the fascinating docuseries, JFK and the UFO File, and of course, The Craze in the Hot Zone, Pyramid X. That's all the search for Atlantis there in Bimini and Cuba. All of these things are right there at your fingertips with the newsletter. So stand up and be counted. Go to darkjournalist.com and make sure you're on that newsletter list. Okay, let's go back to a deep event related to, let's go back to a UFO deep event related to a deep event, and that is the Kennedy assassination. Lloyd Berkner is someone we've done documentaries on. I did a docuseries on him and identified him as the person who was very linked with Kennedy on the revelation of the UFO file. He was part of the sharing aspect. We brought Berkner forward, and it is interesting. If you go back into the history of all this and you look at, you know, people like Stanton Friedman and stuff, he was listed in those documents dealing with Majestic 12 and the idea of this Majestic Committee that came out and the records that people got, et cetera. Some of those documents for sure have been authenticated. Others have kind of lingered in that twilight of, do we believe them or do we not believe them? But certainly the idea of the Majestic Group was legitimate. Of course, James Forrestal, Robert Sarbarker, and others closely related to the whole thing. And, you know, some of the people on MJ-12 very unceremoniously removed by the Exprotect group to maintain the UFO secrecy around the UFO file, exotic technology, and also around this apotheum effect, which we spotlight as a crucial aspect in the heart of this, where you really can't unpin the entire mystery of it unless you go after the apotheum effect that is related directly to this technology. And again, when you're talking about like tensor torsion physics and things of this nature, you're getting somewhere into that X technology. But it is something also that takes place during UFO events. So the UFO file, that is where the X technology resides. It's right there. And it's because they produce the same exact effects. That's why when you're getting into some of the Tesla technology, remember one of the things we pointed out last week is that the Tesla technology shows up there in the Philadelphia experiment, and it's the same year, you know, some 10 months later that the Philadelphia experiment takes place, right after it is Professor John Trump who goes into the hotel room of the inventor Nikola Tesla getting those very, very important papers. So these things all relate in history, and some of the characters who crisscross are dramatic. In Lloyd Berkner's case, as we've put on the record, and we've really, I have to say, you know, we've brought him front and center, shown the relationship to the UFO file through the Robertson panel, shown the relationship of Berkner in Antarctica. Now, this is crucial. This is not something the podcast pop clickers can come up with on their own. It's from deep research. We originated it. We put it on the record. Anything else is just, you know, misappropriation. Especially if they're not using the original facts from the deep research that we've done on this. But the point is that Berkner came from this kind of other side of things. So he's, you know, as a very young man, 22 years old, he's over in Antarctica setting up Little America, the radio station, with Admiral Byrd. And it's very interesting because the book itself that Admiral Byrd will put out is going to be dedicated to his friend, Lloyd Berkner. You know, thank you for your faithful companionship. Now, and loyalty and things of this nature. So we have this very unusual connection, and the person who's moving him into position actually is Herbert Hoover, who was, you know, president who got ousted during the Depression as FDR took over, but a very dynamic character leading up to this. Somehow there's a link back there early on in Berkner's career. That's the first kind of hint that he's a political appointee moving through these various things and being trusted with very, very sensitive operations, including setting up the radio systems for Amelia Earhart and some of her very interesting aerial archaeology. What's that you say? You don't know that she was doing aerial archaeology for different groups? She was doing it for the Mellons. Well, you know, Charles Lindbergh, what was he doing when he wasn't flying the Spirit of St. Louis across the Atlantic? He was searching for ruins in Yucatan for various groups and the government. So they were using, you know, these flight masters, these very early kind of star pilots for these archaeological activities. Make no mistake about it. So when we start to get ourselves wrapped around this idea that Berkner's in the heart of all that, he shows up in World War II, and again, he's trusted with more and more power. By the time you get to the Roswell incident, he goes completely off the map, and he's in a program of matching and marrying science with government research. Well, he goes off the radar and resurfaces, and what is he doing? He is doing the Robertson Panel, and the Robertson Panel is the first major UFO exercise that has any kind of public panel activity, and it's a number of CIA people. But some of the early stars of the UFO field will be there, like Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and he'll talk about the unusual circumstances of reviewing evidence for UFOs at that time, saying he'd be dragged into these very cold theaters with the other members and, you know, these uncomfortable conditions, and shown these rather remarkable UFO films, which aren't available to the public, by the way. And some of the members of the group would come up and shout in his ear, "That's a flock of birds. That's the planet Venus. That's this, that's that," just to take him off the track and unnerve him. And he thought, well, this is weird behavior, rude behavior, but I guess I had some kind of hazing I have to put up with. But this is part of the manipulation going on in the background that we get to hear about in relation. Now, there's two Robertson panels, one that's for the public and another one that goes privately, and it's just under the purview of the CIA. There's a researcher named James McDonald who also is associated with our friend Berkner, and he is in the heart of this. He's seen the initial report. He's a scientist. He's reviewed the initial report. He sees what comes out to the public through the government, and he says, these are two different things. What's going on here? And he starts to become more and more vocal. And James McDonald, he's going to have a very unusual sort of last dance with Berkner upon Berkner's death in 1967. I'm going to get into that next. This is X-Series 233. You're watching The Dark Journalist Show. Whew, we are going very, very deep in this episode, X-233. I do want to really say that in relation to a lot of the disclosure activities that we're seeing, we're looking at a lot of minor league disclosure. I've been hearing that they're going to announce things like the UAPs are and all that in September. And I think a lot of these things are putting us in that position of them being to move and ramp up that UFO threat in order to get us more and more money for the Golden Dome project being put together in the Philly shipyard, as I said, with a Philadelphia experiment has taken place. I'm going to be obnoxious about the Philadelphia experiment part because I want to really make sure that Kerrang goes out throughout all the independent media, so everybody knows that this Golden Defender, Golden Dome UFO defense program is being set up right there where they did the Philadelphia experiment, because it really opens up a great deal of things. And just wait, because we're going to put out even more devastating information about that as we go along here. So let's review now some more of the deep event leading up to the deep event, and that is Lloyd Berkner's history. So he's got all this background in the Robertson UFO panel. And going forward now, if you look, there's a number of exchanges that go on with him. There's a number of documents from intelligence agents and others where he's sharing information back and forth. Here's your folder on the UFO file. Here's this, here's that. And publicly, he can't say anything about it. But what he does is he puts forward the idea, the notion, that we should do the International Geophysical Year, 1957, 1958, go to Antarctica and study the ionosphere and invite the Russian scientists to come along with us. It's a very unusual and interesting idea. And it seems like, in general, I want to see IGY has changed everything. And it seems to be some recognition by the powers that be about something there. Was it UFO disclosure? Was it some different understanding of the magnetics of the ionosphere? You know, was it portal? Whatever it happened to be, there was a lot of espionage that was involved. And I will tell you this, that the International Geophysical Year never ended. In fact, still funded. The original funding from 57 to 58 was extended, and then it just became an ongoing budget item. It never ended. This is part of the strangeness of IGY, and it figures right in the heart of this. But who set it up? It was Lloyd Berkner, again, operating in that role. By the time President Kennedy gets into office, Lloyd Berkner becomes one of his top advisors for the space program, and he's the one who's saying we have to put a man on the moon before 1970. So within this decade, we're going to do it, and he's shaping that whole conversation with Kennedy, and he's also shaping part of the conversation saying we choose to go to the moon and Mars. This is the addition of Berkner that got left out in JFK's speech, but he's the one putting it forward with Kennedy. Now, in our documentary, JFK, The Final Speech, which is all about JFK going to the Trade Mart, on his way to the Trade Mart to make this world-shattering international address at the Trade Mart with Lloyd Berkner on November 22nd, right there in Dallas at the Trade Mart. But unfortunately, President Kennedy is assassinated while he's on the way to this meeting. Now, one of the details that I got about what was going to happen at this ceremony at the Trade Mart, and there's a lot of things. People who've researched the JFK assassination understand that the Trade Mart had its own security issues, and it was highly discouraged as a place to go for the president to speak because of all the security holes that were involved. There's no question in my mind, if they didn't get the opportunity in Dealey Plaza, that would have been the next site for the assassination. And in fact, there's some information that there were assassins that were trailed out there. But everything really did go well in Dealey Plaza for the CIA side. Now, when we look at it, the Trade Mart is only about 10 minutes. So the President Kennedy was right on his way. It's only about 10 minutes away. And the speech now that was going to happen, and I've seen the documents, the speech that was going to happen was the flag from the White House was going to be flown in on the White House official helicopter, and President Kennedy was going to have it, and he was going to hold it and hand it to physicist Berkner for the announcement that they were going to make. Now, you know, I've put on the record before that this definitely had something to do with the cooperation of the U.S. and the Russians in space. There's no question about it. The entire piece about cooperation with matters in outer space with the Soviet Union is on record there at the Kennedy Library, and anybody can go and see the document. The newspapers were coming out with it. Kennedy had proposed it through the UN. Sergei Khrushchev, the son of Nikita Khrushchev, went forward after all of this many years later and gave out the information. Yes, in fact, President Kennedy and my father were working on a joint moon mission together. That would have ended the arms race, probably would have ended the Cold War. You probably would not have had Vietnam. There was a totally different track lying in wait in that deep state of the United States government, hanging out there in the background. And the players that would be involved were continuity of government players. Those players and that system continue to grow, and their force and their impact now, far from being a thing or a creature of the Cold War, have only grown. This is part of the problem. But let's go back to Berkner for a moment. The assassination happens instead. The announcement never gets made. But Berkner himself makes the statement to his students there at the Science Center, and he says, President Kennedy and I were to have made an announcement that was going to have staggering international implications. Now, the speech itself has always been this strange, nebulous thing. And in fact, it took someone who was an associate of LBJ's to demand this, somebody who was very big in department stores. And he got a copy of it. But the thing that they gave out many years later was this highly militaristic version of the whole thing. And it was pushing for, you know, a stronger nuclear presence. It had all these threatening things in there that Kennedy would just, you know, he's the person who just made the June 10th speech, you know, talking all about the peace speech. And this is that whole thing. It's absolutely crucial speech that he makes in June. How is he going to come out in November with this militaristic, bombastic speech? Now, the last speech was something else, and whatever it was that he was going to bring forward, it was going to relate directly to a new approach in space and may have even included a line of UFO disclosure in indicating they were going to do that with their Soviet partners. There are, in fact, newspaper articles in the period saying that Kennedy is about to announce a new kind of detente in space policy going on. We've put that on the record and how NASA is at the heart of so much of this, because what is in the heart of this is the Blue Enigma program. Now, we've done documentaries on Blue Enigma as well. I've put it on the record. And when we revealed it in 2023, the government went back on its heels. I heard from people who were, you know, counterintelligence agents who got in touch with me and said, you know, oh, you know, we want to talk to you about your research. And, you know, by the way, how did you find out about all this blue stuff anyway? It's kind of interesting if you think back on it. And part of that gets us to my conversation about Grush, which we're going to roll into here in a minute. But I think it is crucial for us to remember that this response by the government saying, yeah, we did have blue, it was a program, it was for UFO crash retrieval, but since we never found anything, it doesn't mean anything and just forget about it. Now, you might have heard me mention that before because we brought blue up in the spring of 2023, did a documentary of it in the fall of 2023, and the government announces, yes, there was a blue program. They disclose it in 2024, in March, a whole year later. So we got the information first. We put the information out, and that apparatus that had been holding this information, they were on their heels. They eventually had to admit it, and it's very confusing. That was Kona Blue, and it was very confusing. They didn't know, you know, the public wasn't aware of this program. They were trying to pretend, oh, this is a program that we had done in the last decade or whatever. Absolutely absurd. It's been active, actually, since 1947, and President Kennedy was the heir to that program, and his battle over Blue Gemini and the program there, which is this strange orphan program, which was chasing UFOs. What happened in relation to all this is that the von Braun end of the NASA paperclip wing was really adamant to have this in place and to have it developed in private. And President Kennedy saying, no, NASA is public. You know, this is what we're talking about. If you don't stop messing around, I'm sending this whole thing back to the military, who's at least the devil in the details that I know. And there was this whole back and forth over it. Now, very interestingly, after President Kennedy's death, this battle, this showdown, shows up in the bullet points of the folder list of Guy Bannister, who is the private eye who is employing Oswald in the summer of 1963. Well, he dies mysteriously before the Warren Commission comes out, and his secretary dies, and all of his paperwork disappears. The feds raid his office and all these different things. Bannister is a very important character in the heart of all this because he had to mold and shape Oswald to be the designated culprit in the middle of all this. But he's the person who's deeply involved with the UFO file, and he shows up in the heart of the Garrison investigation on all this. Garrison, who knew him, and Garrison, who knew of him and his work setting up what? The UFO file for the FBI, the X-Files. That's what he called it. I kid you not. Now, we've done a lot in the X series about all this. It's X-steganography. And the whole idea, fundamentally, I mean, it goes much further back, but I'll just speak of it in terms of the phenomena for modern technology, is that you take a program that is about to go black because it reveals too much about the technology that you have, and you move it through different government agencies, changing the nomenclature and the naming style, and the X will show up in front of that over and over again as a naming style. And that way you're going to be able to sit down your agents who are working in these various intelligence agencies and say to 20,000 agents, all you have to do is follow the designations. So X-steganography, although it originally comes out of mystery schools and it originally comes from even Pythagoras and ancient Egypt and some of the different things that they did for hiding, you know, the Greeks actually called it a page within a page. Well, blue and X are both different types of steganography, and they show up over and over again in mystical texts and also in a lot of that background. So you have to understand, when we're looking at this, it's not a lot of the official records aren't very telling about all this. You need to be able to read between the lines about what steganography is, after all. And of course, it comes to us from Johannes Trithemius, who was an abbot there in the 15th century, who has this incredibly mystical experience, but feels, because of his position in the church, that they might respond to his spiritual visions and think he's a heretic. So therefore, he develops this, and he says, I'm using the steganography to do it, and that's going to form, as the Greeks say, a page within a page. But those who understand it will be able to read it, because it's out in the open. It's not a cryptography that's hidden. It's sitting there right out there in plain sight. This is the nature of steganography. So we need to understand there's a lot of that active when you get around the UFO file. That's why the naming of things is very important. And it's also why, when you have disinformation, it needs to adopt and mimic and caricature the real thing. And that's what we get a lot of in the UFO file. For example, after we brought out all the information about blue and the government said, oh no, you know, that program, not only is it no longer active, but it never found, yes, we did have the program, but it never found any bodies or crash retrievals. Well, it's very funny because they came up with a program and they roped in these various naive journalists. And I point them out, Michael Schellenberger was one of them. And he did a whole congressional thing with Nancy Mace and Lou Elizondo and others. And he's standing up there and they're like, you know, first of all, he only found out about the UFO file at all within the last year or something before they had him up there. And he said, as soon as I found out about it, I had a half dozen intelligence agencies calling me up, wanting to share all kinds of information about locations and bodies and everything. Gee, how about that? That's the way the CIA spins it. They're not going to give anything to some weird, naive journalist in the heart of all this. Come on, let's get real. their job is intelligence, counterintelligence, lying, you know, deception, manipulation of facts, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, the idea that they're going to just lay this stuff in this guy's lap is hilarious. And what they do is they show him a false program called Immaculate Constellation. And he's like, oh, if you want the name for the thing, you know, I put it up behind my paywall and all the rest of it. This is how so much of this works now in our PopClick podcast environment. It's not good. And we need a new paradigm for how these things work. That program, nothing ever came out of that. Zilch. And the people who originally try to put it out, you know, basically are too embarrassed at this point to even talk about it anymore, because nothing ever came out about it. Zip. And the name is just some kind of like a phony floating thing to be like, aha, I'm the intelligence agent and I'm telling you, here's the secret program. Well, you know, I've given you really hardcore foundations that don't require intelligence agents at all to get to the bottom of. It's just based on research, and I brought the research forward. The blue program existed. It went through the Kennedy administration. It had been there before. It's how you get the naming system for things like Blue Book and others. As a matter of fact, one of the things that the Wall Street Journal revealed last year was that you know, they were trying to get out of this whole idea of revealing things. They were trying to put the genie back in the bottle, because, and I need to explain this a little bit, but I'll mention the program first. So they said that there was a hazing program inside of the Air Force and the military called Yankee blue, and they would show them false images of UFOs so that they thought they were read in. And then they would go out and tell these stories and be like, I'm a whistleblower, et cetera. But in fact, they had just seen things that had been, you know, massaged and were ready by intelligence agencies. Now, a lot of that is bogus. And somebody was trying to put the whole operation back in the Pandora's box, because there is a danger for what they're trying to do with the false CIA UFO threat, which is if they reveal too much on their end, just by having it out there, people might get wise to the fact that they've been hiding this for 80 years and what they're really doing with it. So if they flim-flam it too much, if it becomes too much of a circus, too much of a joke, you know, too much of a, oh, I saw an egg and felt a love for the egg, as we've seen in some of the more ridiculous testimony, you know, then they run the risk of really making the public wonder, huh, what's going on back there? The original mission of X-Protect was to keep the secrecy at all costs, including lethal costs. And there's some very unusual aspects that go on here, which get to dark journalism. One of those things is that they used what I call an astral agency to do things like project the men in black. Now, if you're just studying on a deep state track and trying to get a handle on the UFO part, this next part that I'm telling you gets into psychic activity, which we know that the CIA is involved in, and astral groups that are good at astral projection that they've recruited from other countries, which is why so many of the Men in Black stories, the people involved seem to have these kind of exotic figures. I'm going to read a story here about a woman who had an abduction experience back in the 1960s at a drive-in with her mother. They had a sighting experience, and it turned out there was missing time and all these other factors. The woman's name is Patricia Hyde, and she's actually now a former FBI agent. She let her story out about this abduction experience, and I found it to be one of the most interesting. We're going to read a few things about it, but I'm going to take it after the point of when she was abducted to the strange appearance of the men in black and the types of things that would happen to her. Eventually, she would get abducted and be put in a hospital over this. And she had received a few warnings. She got a job working there for the FBI as a typist originally. I want you to understand, I didn't go around talking about my interest in UFOs during working hours, she explained. There weren't that many people who I felt were open-minded enough to relate my experience to. Patricia pointed out that the federal government doesn't have the reputation for hiring kooks, so she kept her UFO activities pretty much to herself. Late one night, I was already in bed in my small apartment. There was a knock on the door. I got up and cracked the door openly an inch or two, leaving the chain lock in place. There, standing in the hall, was this Oriental man. At first, I didn't think it was too strange because I had an Oriental friend, and this man called me by name. But it's what he said next that really shook me up. Miss Hyde, you will stop investigating flying saucers. I just looked at him kind of funny and said, you must be crazy, because I'm not the type of person to be frightened so easily. Next, he said something to the effect, I'm telling you, you will. Pat says she slammed the door in the man's face. I got so mad that I turned around and opened the door all the way to yell out at him. However, when I looked up and down the hall, there was nobody there. Pat couldn't see how it was possible for anyone to have disappeared so fast. What was the strange Oriental man dressed like? Well, he had on a suit that was dark blue or black. She did notice that he had deeply slanted eyes, more so than any other Oriental person she had ever met. Now, I want to point this out, which is a lot of the original encounters with men in black had all of these Oriental features. The fascinating thing that we brought forward and really put on the record and emphasized going deep about how they developed this astral agency is that if you look into the history of the Sami, you'll find that, we'll go first to the work of John Keel, fantastic UFO and Fortean investigator, Mothman prophecies, all that stuff. He was the original newspaper man on the spot. And he would go very much out on a limb. And, I read his stuff even when I was a kid. So I guess if there's any influence on dark journalism, John Keel is one of the first, along with Casey Steiner, Gurdjieff, and the gang. But one of the interesting things that Keel did was he started to wonder, like, why do all these men in black reports that he's following up on, because he's going door to door and talking to these people. And he says, why do they all appear Asian? What's going on here? And he decides, I'm going to clear this up once and for all. So he gets photographs of all of these different types of racial groups, from Nordic groups, you know, English, Chinese, African, and he presents them all and says, point out the men in black. Now, he's made a very thorough study. He's included Alaskans. He's included everyone in there. And he said that it wasn't 10% or 20% or 50% that got identified as this one group. It was 100%. And that group were Laplanders, which is an old term for the Sami people. And Sami are a very remarkable group out there in around Finland and the surrounding areas. And one of the most famous is Renee Zellweger, for example, a very beautiful appearance. They're very interesting people from a number of different perspectives, which are fascinating, fascinating history. But if you go deep into that history, you're going to find their shamans are some of the most world-renowned of all, and that they had this terrifying ability to, you know, do this astral projection to kind of secure their space there from invasion and things of this nature. They're known for this in that region throughout the Middle Ages. Now, it's very interesting because in 1913, if you check that history, the United States imported a large number of these Laplanders to Alaska. And the ostensible reason was for them to do reindeer training and reindeer raising, all these different things. It's my belief that they developed a psychic group working there, and that the entire Men in Black phenomena is the government using their astral powers of the Sami to project these terrifying things. As a matter of fact, a lot of the experiences the people had, like Patricia, where she goes into these strange hospitals and things, and you know, she's disoriented, there's all this missing time, and they do strange things, like they can appear or disappear. If you look at that history about them, they make vehicles disappear, they make themselves disappear. There's something much, much deeper going on with the Men in Black phenomena. The astral agency side is something I'm going to do. Now, we've done a follow-up episode on, because we've done a number of episodes about the astral agency. But there's information coming in all the time that correlates with the type of psychic investigations that we do. And we're fortunate enough to have people like Gigi Young, who's a very close friend to the show and a great ally to all the Dark Journalist X Series research. And her research now, you know, what she has out there publicly, you have to make sure you follow Gigi, because she's bringing forward incredible, incredible information. But when it comes to these types of aspects, you can't get a better associate, a comrade. And what's quite fascinating is the Sami have this ability, and that we were basically harnessing that. And that incredible exotic appearance is that incredible, luminous exotic appearance of the Sami people. The government using that and exploiting that in these cases to keep people away from what? They did not want them talking about the UFO file. They did not want them talking about their experiences. As a matter of fact, in so many of the abduction experiences, what is it that takes place? You know, and I've talked to a number of abductees over my lifetime, the people who've interviewed them. I've known most of the best, including Stanton Friedman, John Mack, and others. And, you know, nobody claims to know exactly what's going on there, but something very interesting that John Mack pointed out to me when I was, you know, literally a teenager at the time is, and he was, of course, the Harvard professor who got into so much controversy because he was treating the abduction experience like a legit experience, as he should have, and was working with Bud Hopkins and all those different aspects. But what he said was that, you know, we don't understand the phenomena because people are being abducted through things. And that's how I eventually came to the apotheum aspect, which is the whole reality distortion thing that takes place when these craft show up, when the beings show up, and all the rest of it. There's also an astral part there because some of the abductees, when they're being floated up to the ship, especially if they're coming out of vehicles, they can still see their physical body in the vehicle while they're being floated up into these ships. Well, that is a different kind of thing than being physically abducted into a ship. How about I'm physical, but I'm moving through walls and things like that? So there's dimensional shifting and there's dematerialization. These things defy the kind of normal physics. There's a reality distortion that takes place. That's where you get things akin to missing time and all the rest of it. This is how we can grow to understand the tools that are being used in the background. This is how we can get to understand how remote viewing plays such a key role and that they're working at this level. Now, then you have this whole idea of the alien aspect. There's certainly another involved here. We've gone deep with it. And when I've talked to people who've had the abduction experiences, they're dealing with something else. They're not dealing with, you know, government people in suits or something. There's a different class of being here. There's no question about it. How they're related to human beings is very interesting. And their origin, you know, our automatic assumption is space, ET, etc. And it could very well be an off-world group. But there could be a group here who's more advanced. And that is something that has to be, you know, when we've looked at things in controversies like the Cosmos Club, for example, which I've called UFO Bilderberg, and which Luis Alvarez, who I mentioned earlier, is part of. He's part of the Robertson panel. He was part of the Cosmos Club. You know, you have to understand that very early on, a group like the Cosmos Club, which was founded in 1870 by a very obscure John Wesley Powell, who was stationed during the Civil War in Cape Girardeau and lived there for a decade. In 1941, you're going to have this fantastic UFO encounter that takes place, the first of its kind, 6 years before Roswell, right there in Cape Girardeau and Missouri. And that's when Senator Harry Truman is, you know, he's the senator at the time. He's going to become VP in a few years. There's a lot there with that case and that location. But Powell himself being the founder of the Cosmos Club and the Cosmos Club going through the roof in its importance when Powell was basically a nobody and only had one arm after this terrible accident that took place when he was injured during the Civil War. He was obviously remarkable, but his task was remarkable in the fact that they put him in the heart of, you know, finding the Grand Canyon and doing all these remarkable things and setting up the Cosmos Club and his close relationship with the Paiute Indians and Muvoka and all the mysticism around that. We're dealing with an aspect that we don't quite understand, but my surmise for so much of this is that Powell found something related to these advanced groups, probably a craft, and that he started the whole interaction of working around this for the government side, and that this is why he was elevated so much, and that's why eventually the Cosmos Club became UFO Bilderberg. It's still there, by the way, right there in DC. And the way that it works now is, you know, people are recruited in, and if you get far enough, you get briefed in on these different things. Of course, it has its, you know, its normal, regular club side as well. And, you know, it's a great place for a wedding or a special occasion. One of my funniest stories is that when I was talking to John Warner IV about it, who's given us so much information on the UFO file. And of course, he's Senator Warner's son, and he's also the son of Catherine Mellon, the heir to the Mellon banking fortune. And yes, the cousin of Chris Mellon, who's helped, you know, he's helped to identify Chris Mellon being so much involved in that UFO threat aspect going on here. But they try to recruit him into the Cosmos Club as soon as they found out, oh, he's talking UFOs, we're going to get this guy in. So they're still active. They're still recruiting on the UFO side there with the Cosmos Club. I do think that what we've put on the record, and I think there's more and more that's going to come out about John Wesley Powell and very early encounters with what the Native Americans were familiar with, about these groups that had the advanced technology. And that's why Powell was catapulted to this mighty, mighty position. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Oof, nonstop tonight as we go deep into the deep events of the UFO file. It is fantastic to be here with you. I have some quotes to kind of round out the show and a few clips to show you as well. Let's get into those next in this X series 233. And it is Deep Events, the UFO File, and COG Continuity of Government Emergency Powers Activation. Imminent. And I want to put this on the front burner that the things, the supposedly droll moves that they're making with the UFO file are all actually to set up this entire scenario of a UFO threat, and that the people involved in setting up that threat, the various parts from the counterintelligence people pretending to be whistleblowers and all the rest of it, we have to be very, very careful about who the administration takes in and puts into this UAP czar position. And if it's anyone like Elizondo, you know, then that entire effort goes into the trash. The whole thing should split off really into real, genuine UFO research and that UFO Dr. Phil Circus thing that they're doing. That split is going to become important, and it's going to be important for us as individuals, as people looking at the information as we're looking at it. A couple of quick things I want to mention here to kind of round out this episode. One, I mentioned Luis Alvarez, and I didn't really give the heart of why I mentioned that. I want to show not only his relationship to Berkner, but I want to show how these figures are used and how they have what I call five lives syndrome. Berkner has five lives syndrome. Morris Jessup has five lives syndrome. And it's where they actually are used, and it's kind of a graduated process of a number of different lives stations that they occupy. In Alvarez's case, it's quite extraordinary because he's somebody who observes us dropping. You know, he's working with Oppenheimer in a physicist capacity there during the Manhattan Project, and he actually is in one of the planes observing us dropping the atomic bomb. We recently had a terrible anniversary of this. And then he shows up handling the UFO issue with Boyd Berkner in the Robertson panel, and they're both right in the heart of it. Later, he will show up as the physicist who can prove the single bullet theory so that the Warren Commission is taken off the hook and the idea of a second shooter or a third shooter is gone because they can prove it through the magic bullet. And Alvarez is right in the heart of that effort. Then he becomes someone who's basically developing something like CERN in the clouds, where he's doing particle smashing in the clouds. And finally, in the 1970s, we have him working with cosmic forces in order to figure out, are there secret tunnels in the Great Pyramid? His son will go on to give us all the data that we need to figure out, hey, you know what? The whole thing about dinosaurs and the dating of dinosaurs comes from 65 million BC. Well, his son is the one who puts that on the record. And of course, a lot of the mystery school information gives us completely different information, including the fact that in 50,722 BC in Atlantis, they had sent out kind of a worldwide communique. We're going to use this massive death ray to get rid of all the dinosaurs. So how long were these things with us, in fact, and why is there distortion around that or fascination with dinosaur discoveries and things of that nature, as we saw through the figure of Andrew Carnegie? So there's a lot there just through Alvarez, but look again, he is somebody who is linked directly with Berkner, and he's going to be somebody who takes on the role of supporting the Warren Commission, but he was also in that UFO group. So you see how these, if you can understand the function and the pattern of how some of these individuals work, we can get a better idea of who's operating in that deep state and what they need to do on the surface. And some of it does get downright mystical. You're not going to be able to solve it with just an academic mindset, because there are psychic aspects that are involved here. There's higher physics. There's reality distortion, apotheum effects. I mean, there are a lot of factors a multidisciplinary effort, shall we say. So the next piece, I think, when we look at somebody like Alvarez, and then we think about Berkner, well-known as somebody who said, you know, the government keeps too much secrecy and, you know, we need a totally different approach. And Sack and the Curtis LeMay types, you know, the types who dropped the atomic bomb, they don't like Berkner. And Berkner's early warning system, you know, he's saying we don't really need this kind of mutually assured destruction. If we have early warning systems, then we can develop a deterrent and all the rest. And they're like, you know, we're going to get rid of this guy. And remember who he's walking arm in arm with about space declarations and who President Kennedy is on his way to meet. In fact, at the Trade Mart on November 22nd, when he's assassinated, it's Lloyd Berkner standing there waiting for a president who does not arrive. And that president was going to hand him a flag delivered in from the White House helicopter, directly from the White House. What was it that their speech, what was it that was going to take place at that ceremony? And it's no question that it related directly to disclosures about space. The UFO file, that was, you know, definitely what Berkner had the expertise in. So we can see these aspects. And just as a footnote on all this, of course, Berkner himself will die strangely after again engaging this James McDonald character, who was a bona fide scientist who really had drilled down on the UFO file. And even President Johnson, when he gets in, said, well, you know, maybe we should have McDonald out there getting to the bottom of this. Very strange there from Senator NASA Johnson. And I think this is interesting because they have a meeting now and they send in a Johnson aide, and it's James McDonald and it's Lloyd Berkner. It's in a house in Texas, and there's the aide to Johnson as well. For our meeting, it's recorded. Boom. Our friend McDonald goes back home and Berkner goes to a DC think tank. He's going to give a speech. He goes down, he gets a hamburger, eats the hamburger, goes up to give a speech. Bang, he's down. That's the end of Berkner at 62 years old. It's a long journey from Antarctica through World War II, Amelia Earhart, Robertson Panel, Herbert Hoover, IGY, announcing Sputnik when it happened, to giving all this advice to President Kennedy about the space program, and finally the speech that Kennedy was never able to give because he was assassinated, that was supposed to be given basically there, side by side with Berkner. We have to understand these things. If we can get a handle on the history relating to these matters, we're going to be finding ourselves in a much different and much more powerful and aware position, knowledgeable position when it comes to the UFO file and what these events in history mean and how that relates to the limited drops that they're doing relating to disclosure, and how they're doing the, you know, war.gov/UFO. So you've always got war and UFO now when you're looking at these things. And this is how this administration is portraying it. It's a war against the UFOs. That's how they're going to sell it, as a UFO threat. And that's why they've had Elizondo out there for years and years. If Elizondo gets in there, then completely forget about any transparency from the government, because he is the absolute biggest liar when it comes to anything related to the UFO file. Grush is somebody who has been talked about, a position to liaison with officials to get some of this information out. I've spoken with Grush. Of course, I've shared many of our conversations. The problem with Grush is that he, you know, when I invited him to come on the show, he was afraid that Chris Mellon, you know, who controls the whistleblowers, would turn against him. And he spoke to me, you know, very frankly about that possibility. And the more that I talked with him, the more I realized it was Mellon who was controlling him. So somebody like David Grush, who came out with all this information, seemed promising. The deeper we got into it, and you know, we had very long conversation. This is somebody who, you know, was scared for his life if Mellon would turn on him. Now, I also found out through John Warner that there's kind of a Mellon Bilderberg type meeting where they meet with people and coach them, and that Grush was groomed in this process through Chris Mellon. So unless he has an honesty moment and brings forward that information and breaks himself free of the iron glove of DOD billionaire Chris Mellon, who, by the way, is the one who's choosing all of these videos that we get through the DOD for UFOs. So that's why you're getting this less important material. This is the same guy who was the mayor of Area 51 at one point. Let's not forget. Mellon is controlling that, and he's controlling the whistleblowers. That's the disclosure that you have. These people over here that are pushing on the UFO side and saying, oh no, man, we're getting disclosure from that White House. And look, you know, we've got Lou Elizondo, the CIA agent, giving us this background. You're lost, you know, and you're leading people over a hill. It's sad, over the cliff. So we can probably stop them from going over the cliff, even if we're the lone outpost saying, no, no, we've exposed it for years. You know, check the record. We've been ahead of it in every step of the way. The reason we've been ahead of it is because in doing that research, you know, I've used my own ability to research on one hand, and I've had the very best minds and guests working with me on it, including many that have left us now, like Stanton Friedman, Jim Mars, and other real giants in the field. But what I can say is, you know, for their work to be for naught, for it to turn into some CIA fluff show, you know, that can't be allowed to happen. So we need to move in a different, totally different direction with this, a potent direction, even if it's a citizen-driven direction that's eventually reflected in government. But if it can't come via government, which is, you know, under such a corrupt ex-protect group that have already engaged in such illegal activities, how can they ever come clean about anything, and including murdering the 35th president of the United States? You know, the ex-protect group committed that assassination. We have people on the record about that, including Douglas Caddy and other administration, Kennedy administration officials who know that this was the reason. But Kennedy was killed over the UFO file. And Caddy, of course, is the Watergate lawyer who brought this forward and released that bombshell right on this program. And it was E. Howard Hunt who was on his way to prison, and Caddy was his lawyer. And it was in private conversation that Hunt told him that, you know, Kennedy was killed because he was going to give our most vital national security secret to the Russians. And Caddy said, what secret could he give to the Russians? Why would he do that? And like, what's the secret? And Hunt told him, it's the UFO files, the alien presence. And, you know, that was it. He went off to prison. Caddy never spoke to him again. So there's no like, hey, here's a CIA disinformation op. No, I mean, that's a private conversation between those two. And I went back, you know, I mean, I've done a lot with Caddy, a lot of interviews and things. And he has a fantastic, very interesting, colorful history throughout, you know, very interesting figures throughout American history. And he was literally the Watergate 7 lawyer. I mean, this can't have a more historical figure in the heart of all this. But it's very interesting to me because the UFO field ignored him, just like it ignored, you know, all these various important things that were brought forward, just like they're ignoring the Golden Dome being in the Philadelphia shipyard where the Philadelphia experiment took place. You know, it's a weird field because they just want to, they're just wound up like a, you know, toy soldier to go after Lou Elizondo or this nonsense. And I don't even think there's a lot, much of a following there for that. I think it's a lot of it is hyped up. But I think it is crucial that the main figures that are involved, this is what they're going for. They want to help support the UFO threat action. And they're being told there's a lot of technology coming forward, you know, UAP train, the money train is coming, the gravy train is coming, just hang in there and do it. And that's where you're getting a lot of the worst people in the field. And then the mainstream media, of course, is on their own trip. You know, they've been able to hide everything from the public. And now suddenly they're talking about UFOs, but they're using this kind of very flimsy, superficial language about the whole thing. and testing out different trial balloons to get that feedback going. But I think it's quite important, and I can't emphasize this enough, that the trail that we've shown, that we've developed about these deep events in related to the UFO file, the continuity of government program, which is particularly important with the 9/11 anniversary coming up, is that through the CIA, the NGA, and the NRO in particular, NORTHCOM is another one, they've been setting up this UFO threat operation. And it is, in fact, the trigger for the continuity of government program to be activated, in which case there's no more president. There is the general COG commander. He's the same guy who heads up NORAD. It's General Geo, and he's the commander of NORTHCOM, and he is also the COG combatant commander. He becomes the entire ruler of the United States in that scenario. I kid you not, and we still have not seen enough of the importance of the COG program, the oversight that's involved. And he appoints regional governors till things can be secured again and we get an election going. Well, I want you to have real good luck with that. Don't hold your breath. I'm going to read you briefly something related to the COG program. We're going to wrap up this fabulous episode. Woof, this has been a great time to be with you here in this hot, muggy August night. Okay, this is about the implementation of COG on 9/11, and it will end the episode as we started it with Professor Scott's work. Clearly, 9/11 met the conditions for the implementation of COG measures, and we know for certain that COG plans were implemented on that day in 2001 before the last plane had crashed in Pennsylvania. The 9/11 report confirms this twice on pages 38 and 326. It was under the auspices of COG that Bush stayed out of Washington, and that on that day, and other government leaders like Paul Wolfowitz were swiftly evacuated to Site R inside a hollowed-out mountain near Camp David. But the implementation of COG went beyond short-term responses to the installation of what Professor Shirley Ann Warshaw calls a 90-day alternative shadow government outside of Washington. Quote, Cheney jumped into action in his bunker beneath the East Wing to ensure continuity of government. He immediately began to create his shadow government by ordering 100 mid-level executive officials to move to specially designated underground bunkers and stay there 24 hours a day. They would not have rotated out, he informed them, for 90 days, since there was evidence, he hinted, that the terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda, which had masterminded the attack, had nuclear weapons. The shadow government, as a result, needed to be ready to take over the government from the bunkers. That's one, you know, COG scenario that they rolled out, they tested that out, and it's very interesting because, of course, as we know, over time, Cheney is someone who's also very deeply involved with the secrecy around the UFO file and S4 and so many other things. So we have to understand how that pyramid of power operates, and COG and the UFO file, two of the most secret programs involved in the government, along with the secret space program. You take that triumvirate of those three together, and you're really working with something incredibly, incredibly dangerous. That's a three-headed hydra. And unless you get to the bottom of that, you're no longer in charge of your own government. So it's very important we get to the bottom of it. We got to the bottom of some of it tonight for sure. And I want to thank you all for being here with us. We'll see you all next week, and never let it be forgot that once there was a Camelot, and there can be again. See you soon.